For January the 31st, 2014, we talk about Angry Birds Spies, Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, and we ask you, what's your favorite video game tunage? Welcome to the 49th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. It's level 49. We're approaching the 50th level, which in comic book terms is that the silver? That's the silver cover, I think. And then 100 is the gold cover. And then beyond that, it is, mithril and adamantium and other metals
tungsten.
That don't exist. Yeah, tungsten.
So which one do we jump the shark? Have we penciled that in yet?
Oh, that was ages ago, Dennis.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there is one thing I want to address. We were addressing it off mic, and I want to say this here. But episodes have been getting really, really long recently. And I know that people are of two minds whenever you say, like, hey, what's happening? Like, mostly people want more because it's more free entertainment, and we want to give it to you. However, going on for as long as we tend to is bad for all of us. If this episode's a little bit shorter than what you've grown accustomed to, it'd be neat to do like a chart and show like the inflation of time over time. I have all of that data actually readily available. I just have to chartify it. I have to dig it up. It's probably a couple months old at this point. But
We've already had a couple good charts for the show, so
yes, we have.
That might be worth it. I'll dive in and get the data for that. Chartify it.
Okay, cool. Let's
and just playing off our previous one. Just for the record, we are going to inflate time by chartifying it.
Yes. is that like some kind of weird like Rocky Horror reference or?
No, I'm just pointing out that the things we're saying.
Make no sense. They never do, David. Where we're going, we don't need syntax. But where we are, where we're all going, we also need to know what's happening. And, that's going to be the huge, right? We're going to talk about some game news, things that are happening. We're also going to talk about things that we've been playing. I've got a humdinger, you guys. I've been remiss in playing this thing, and we're going to talk the hell out of it. And then we're going to wrap up with a multiplayer question about music. That a bunch of people have participated in. So in order to hold to our promise to give you shorter episodes and make you want more, I guess, why don't we go ahead and do... It's time for the brief where we talk about things that are happening in this world of ours. Can I talk about national security, you guys?
Sure.
Yes. So you can't write comedy like this. Actually, so I'm at work, and I get a little buzz on my phone, news apps that have push notifications that just make me believe the world is falling apart. It's actually pretty great. but I get this notification that says, hey, so the government not only is like checking your phone records and blah, 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 but they are using mobile apps such as, and I shit you not, Angry Birds to track people of interest. So ignoring the obvious and tasteless joke of terrorists using Angry Birds as practice.
I made that joke a couple episodes
back. Did you?
Way back. Yeah, that's like episode 3 shit.
Oh, okay. Okay. Cool.
Whoa. Well, we are retroactively judging you.
Well, yeah, it was in poor taste then as well.
Oh, okay. No, just in this sense. I have a vague recollection of that as well. But it's really just what it says on the tin, just more details are coming out from Mr. Snowden over in Russia and all of his timed leaks and whatnot. That is another thing that they're doing. So potentially, with certain apps, including, popular games, Angry Birds was the one that was mentioned in the media because, that is the synecdoche, the metonymy, Xerox is to copiers as Nintendo was to video games 30 years ago. And now Angry Birds is to video games to everybody who doesn't realize that now it is Candy Crush TM that is to video games, but why not? So it's possibly more, but like the idea that by opening a game on your phone, and playing it, you are giving away a bunch of information about not only your location, but your age, gender, blah, blah, blah. on and on down the line in perpetuity. So not even in your private leisure moments. Okay, private, quote unquote. Yeah. Not even in your leisure moments. are you safe from the electric eye in the sky?
So did they...
Go ahead.
Did they say how they are doing this? Because, I mean...
It's mostly through, like, cooperation and backdoors and stuff.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a... I feel like that's a, you know, when are the lawsuits then going to start happening?
I've got no idea. So, usually there are clauses in that that have to do with, you know, freedom of information or, you know, like, where it becomes, if you did this for the federal government, like, you can't be sued for it. That's my understanding. Or they make it very difficult to go after it because it is technically like, oh, we just subpoenaed their records about who did what. Like, all these app developers are gathering stuff about you at all times, pretty much.
Right.
You know, like, if you sniff packets, like, it's sending stuff back, you know, no matter what. And mm-hmm. sometimes it's used for good. Like, you've seen the heat maps that Valve has made about, like, Team Fortress 2 maps
right.
and,
yeah.
like, using
yeah.
that to actually improve the products. Or, you know, like, when you click, yes, send anonymous usage data about this thing. Like, all of that goes back. This is just them then providing that to the federal government, like the phone companies are as well.
As a side note, there is no such thing as anonymous usage data or anonymous data.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, even your MAC address and, not, you know, just the little serial number for your device on a network, that can be linked to a bunch of other stuff. Like, what is it?
Right.
All that somebody needs is your age, your zip code, and your sex, and, like, maybe a letter of your name to, like, pin down your exact identity. It's real scary. Mm. And so I don't say this to be, like a fearmonger, but I've always believed that there's a bell curve of being scared of technology. Where if you know nothing about it, it is like a crazy witch box. If you have medium knowledge, you're like, hey, I can use this to pay my bills online. And if you know more about it, then you're like, oh, and it's like even worse than a witch box. So I think that all of us are about like maybe like 2/3 of the way towards like witch box plus.
Yeah. how much That's, should we fear this? Somewhere yeah. between not at all and completely.
Yeah. Yeah. Somewhere between not at all and no.
Yeah. I find it vaguely amusing, the idea that the government has like my name, my address, my closest known associates, my bank account, and my star rating in Angry Birds.
Yeah. You're a punk ass bitch. You only got 2 stars on most of these. Jeez. For shame, Dennis.
Exactly.
For shame.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I just wanted to make that like a little PSA in case that didn't cross your transom and just add a little bit of absurdity into your day and make you question whether or not you wanted to play more of The Room too. So, you know. As you do. Who wants to go next? Yeah. I'm going to volunteer you, Dennis.
Sweet, because I was about to volunteer myself.
You can't
volunteer me. I volunteer myself.
You know you don't get severance if you do that, right?
Oh, okay. let me think about that. I retract my statement.
Okay, cool.
Let me. I'm going to completely botch this story, and then you can maybe fire me.
Okay.
That's an interesting mental game to play. Like, how long could I not show up at work before they fire me? But I digress.
Scientific method.
in the vein of. You know, games being ruined, like Angry Birds was by NSA involvement. Sly Cooper is going to be made into a movie, which, you know, generally I would say is a good thing. But they've released a trailer and screenshots for it, and the art style for just all the characters is an abomination.
Please tell me it's live action.
I thought that was honestly that was my first thought. My first thought was the only way that this could look this bad is if they had to do it this way for like, you know, live action. It's not though. It seems to be completely animated. And just they, you know, Sly Cooper has always had a very strong visual design.
Oh shit.
Yeah, like
what's happening?
Yeah, yeah, I put a link to it in the robot.
Like of all the things that they, like, they just take the models. Like, take the models and maybe put some materials on them, but, like, it looks good. I don't mean to, like, cut this down at the knees. This is awful.
Yeah, it's horrible. And I'm glad. I'm not insane, so other people are having the same reaction. It's always, Sly Cooper the games have always had a great visual style. they've always, you know, had the cell shading going on, and that's gotten more and more sophisticated. So I went and looked up screenshots of Thieves in Time is the most recent one. And it's like, it's, you know, it's really detailed and elaborate, but it still has that cell shading roots or root to it. And it's very, like, there is a blueprint right there with how you modernize this and make it more detailed while still staying true to the visual style that is iconic for this franchise.
Yeah.
And they just toss it out the window and, like, we're going to do a, basically Uncanny Valley, the movie.
Yeah.
Sly Cooper looks, I don't even know how to describe it. Like,
he looks like somebody, like, you know, on their off time, like, paid a lot of attention to how his genitals would be rendered.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about that level of detail.
Wait, what?
You need to see the picture of this, and I'll, you know, we can post a link or whatever, but it'll be in the show notes, I'm sure. Like, this, it's just, it's horrible. And, you know, I watched the trailer, the voices seem on point, and, you know, I am confident that you could make a good movie out of this universe. Like, it's got, everyone's seen Robin Hood, right? The Disney animated film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
the movie, like, along with Sally from the Sonic franchise, the one image that launched a billion furries. But yeah, really, like, Robin Hood is an awesome movie. Like, that was one of my favorites. It's great. Yeah.
And this could easily be a modernization of, like, that type of aesthetic for it. And it just, they've botched it. And like you said, the characters, that's very well put. The characters look like someone's been paying a lot of attention to how they would look naked.
Yeah.
And it's a scary thing. I don't like it. And you know, I'm a fan of taking video games to movies, even though it doesn't work out very often, just because it's more of things I like. Mm-hmm. And this one is just out the gate has done a huge misstep.
Yeah,
I'm still pushing for Sly Cooper would be awesome played by an actual raccoon.
Oh, like Homeward Bound.
Yes, that's what I meant when I said live action. I'm meaning like actual raccoons and hippos and whatever the other animals are.
Yeah, you know, Goldie Hawn is Sly Cooper.
There's either a movie or a TV show coming out where there's like Rocket Raccoon or something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's the master, not the Masters of the Universe. That's different, but like it is some C grade level Marvel. Yeah. A property that has Andy from Parks and Rec as Rocket Raccoon. It's crazy.
Yeah, all I know is my friends are into video games, I'm sorry, comic books, are really, really excited for that.
Yeah, I don't know.
And so that's what that made me think of, but...
Yeah.
And somehow Sly Cooper looks like he's very much a raccoon, but he doesn't look like a raccoon. Like his, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, no, he looks like a like late stage, like you know, he walked through the fly teleporters. Like, you know, it was, it's like if his lab was in a dump, and instead of like, I guess a dump would have plenty of flies, but I will say it's just a raccoon wandered in. Like he's
to
like.
To be fair, what if that's actually the plot?
Okay, then we can talk. New information has come to light, man. So, yeah. Thanks for bringing this to my attention. No, actually, no. I am so sorry that this is a thing I know exists now. Man, such a waste.
Yeah.
Blah.
Yeah. Oh well.
I mean, I say that as somebody who is not like I don't know that I've played a second of Sly Cooper, but like I've always kind of appreciated the design aesthetic as a fan of the cartoony, right?
Yeah, and they're so fun. It's like a stealth light kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good. And they, you know, they do a good job. I won't say with the story, but with the characters. Like, these are very much characters that can support a movie.
Yeah.
Even more so than, like, anyone from the Jack and Daxter series. So,
right.
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
But, yeah, I don't know. That's two things that have been ruined. I'm curious to see what these other stories are about.
I know what Ben's is, and I kind of want us to be lifted up. A little bit. So I want to have you say, Ben, what you have.
Perhaps have a change of perspective.
Yeah.
All right. Forced perspective. All right. So this was just a game that I saw. I think I first heard about it maybe a couple weeks ago. But it just has a tech demo out right now. But it's all about forced perspective. And so the idea is you can pick up any object, and wherever you drop it, it will make it as large as it possibly can be without intersecting with anything in the current perspective that you have. And so that kind of doesn't make sense when you verbalize it. It's a lot easier to see in practice. So I think we'll have a link for it in the show notes.
Just put it there.
But the game, yeah, the game's called it's by Pillow Castle, which is a game company in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so basically, by picking up an object, you could say, like, pick up a water bottle, and if you turn and face, like, down a long ways and drop it, it'll be the size of the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
And then you can pick it up from afar and then drop it down close to you, and it'll be small again.
Yeah.
And so you can change...
So basically, it keeps its visual size the same, but places it wherever you put it, wherever you point, so that, you know, since, you know, things that are farther away, you know, look smaller or whatever, that'll cause it to change its scale.
Yeah, so it'll scale up to match what it would be if it was visually where you dropped it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like the way that they put it, you know, the way that I saw in our, you know, pre-roll conversation here was you walk into a big empty area, a big open area, and you see the Eiffel Tower, you know, off in the distance, looking as the Eiffel Tower does, and then, like, the cursor hovers over it, and then you pick it up, and it turns out that, like, oh, this was actually just hovering, like, close to your head, and it's an action figure of the Eiffel Tower, or a model of it. And then, you know...
So the entire game is you being, what is that, that one painting, the dude with the apple in front of his face?
Yeah, Magritte.
Yeah.
Or that bit from Futurama where they were in the holodeck and Kif was like, oh, I would pluck the moon from the sky, and he goes to pick it up and it's not the moon, like, way far away. It's like a beach ball sized thing, like, that's right there. But it's a trick of perspective. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of which, I think my favorite one of them is one where you're trying to find the exit in each room, and one of them, the way you solve it is you literally take the moon out of the sky, pick it on the ground, and then pick the exit off of the surface of the moon.
That's funny.
Yeah. It's on the dark side of the moon.
What's it remind you of, Dennis?
Well, we talked about a couple months back.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, we talked about a couple months back. There's a game that's much like this where you can grow or shrink anything
scale.
As much as you
want. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's like with that, you were holding a shrink ray and something stayed in place and you scaled it in place.
Yeah,
whereas this one, you pick it up and then you kind of scale it by moving it closer to or further away from you.
Yeah, like in scale, you gave it size juice, you know, so it was like a finite thing, whereas this is more, you know, like, Alice in Wonderland style weirdness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Did we say what it is? Like, just looking at the title, it's just called a first person puzzler, but the title screen's like museum perspective something or other, museum simulation technology. But that might not be the
tech
thing that it shows.
Yeah, it's a tech demo. I guess it's called Museum. I think it's the title for it. But
well, it says Museum of. There's a little of on the end.
Okay.
This is super early in its development cycle.
Yeah.
Like, there's no... This is, like... This could have come out of a game jam.
True. And, like what it reminds me of is, like, have you guys ever played the precursor to Portal? It's called Narbacular Drop.
What?
I actually have not.
Yeah, no, it's good.
That was, like, their senior project, right?
And it was, like, a group of people at DigiPen. It was like a school project, but like this feels kind of similar to that, you know, in the sense that that was proof that you could do these weird portal things and like maybe there would be a game based around it. And this is like, oh, the technology exists. You just have to render two things and then, you know, it chooses which one is actually real based on the actual distance that it would, you know, choose a normal from where you're pointing at. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. It's real cool. Like, I'm very happy that I know it exists. Where'd you find out about it, Ben?
Reddit.
Okay.
Where anybody finds anything out, right?
I suppose. Yeah, the front page of the internet, they say. Food, fun, and fashion. The mall has it all. David, take us home.
Sure. I've actually got a follow-up story to last week's story about King, the company that makes Candy Crush Saga, trying to trademark the word saga.
So funny.
So, so over the weekend, King received a notice via Catapult that a group of Vikings have formed a class action lawsuit challenging their control of the word saga.
Okay.
A spokesman for the Viking has said that, you know, as a union that specializes in rape, murder, arson, and rape, we have complete respect for King's business practices. For that reason, we hope to resolve this by honorable trial by combat. Lawyers for the Vikings have said that they're too afraid to tell them that that's not how lawsuits work. I realize you guys might not realize this, but, you know, as one of Sweden's largest export industry, the Vikings are actually highly organized. Right. You might remember the controversy during the development of Skyrim when the negotiations broke down over whether an arrow to the knee constituted a workplace injury. And, you know, unfortunately, that time, a strike by the Viking Local 137 turned out to involve Vikings simply striking anyone that disagreed with them. So although, you know, some people have really questioned the merit of the Vikings' claims, but they may have a leg to stand on. Experts have said that while some of the Candy Crush saga... some of the candy being crushed during the saga in question may contain honey that most likely falls short of the minimum mead per saga required under Swedish law. As one Swedish culinary expert put it, "Hurdy gruppen der saga swoopin, bork, bork, bork."
This is crazy. I can't believe this is actually happening in the world that we live in, David. But it's totally real. Oh man, the world is a magical place. I think we often forget that.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, every so often it's important to, you know, remember it. Some people do it by watching, you know, an upworthy video, the last scene of which will change your entire life.
As you
some
do.
People do it with Viking unions.
Yeah. You know, I think that organization at the, you know, that's at the end of the tech tree, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Well, I wish them Godspeed. And I'm happy I don't live in a monastery right now.
Yeah, I feel like a company called King, like that did not end up so well in the past.
Nope. Oh man. So before I knew that this was going to address the very serious notion of just the Vikings, they've been taking the world by storm recently. I don't even know that tactic that doesn't qualify really for a bleh. I thought you were going to talk about how somebody said, like, "Hey, King, maybe you should like take down this game that you have called Pack-a-Void, which just like uses the Pac-Man ghosts."
Like, oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah. That's one that someone's claiming they pretty much straight up stole from a like a indie developer, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's not only stealing from Namco, it is stealing from like somebody who is nowhere near in the position that they are to actually make money off of, you know, this thing, right? So yeah, it's double jeopardy. Not double jeopardy. It is two shitty things happening at the same time, which just goes to say, let he who is without infringement cast the first cease and desist.
Yep.
Yeah, that sounds like how that goes.
Yeah. Oh well. Okay. So let's wish these Vikings well in their quest.
I know, it's just, I feel kind of bad. It's not been a good time for, Sweden lately. You know, first Notch with Scrolls, and now the Vikings with Sagas, so.
Well, no, the problem is they have to, like, it takes them 4 months to get anywhere by that fucking boat. Like, have you ever tried to take a water route to San Francisco from Sweden? It's crazy.
It takes a while.
Yeah, no, no. I just I have all the sympathy in the world for them. Oh, man. That and socialized medicine.
The grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing, and I want to ask if there are any volunteers who want to go first.
I can go first.
Ben, go. What is replaced XCOM?
Yep, it's
XCOM. No, it's fine. It's fine.
Still XCOM.
You dig deep.
But I am like on the last mission. So I've gotten through a bottleneck and so it's almost done. I'll beat it later tonight. No worries. But cool. Yeah, it's great. I made a mech out of one of my people, which was pretty cool.
Did he have to die in a hail of gunfire first?
His limbs did.
Okay.
Maybe not gunfire, but you know, yeah, it's pretty raw, dude. They amputate the limbs, put them
as a side note. I got that reference.
Oh, I could tell by your laugh. But really, so like if a soldier gets injured in the heat of battle and like they're disabled, you know, because of dismemberment and such, you can actually opt to augment them in such a way that turns them into monstrosities that are more machine than man.
Actually, you turn like healthy, fully functional humans into
oh shit.
Just chop them off anyway. If they die in combat, they die. You leave them.
So it would be awesome if that was kind of like the Protoss in StarCraft, and like your heroes who fell honorably in battle could be resurrected forever and ever as like crazy vanguards or whatever the fuck they're called.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dragoons.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, thank you, dude.
Why do I know that?
I just yeah. So you as a human being opted to sacrifice somebody to make them into a an abomination unto the Lord evil, right?
Yeah, they
weren't really pulling their weight anymore. It was the support class, and they do not age well, I guess, as the game goes on. So.
Okay, so we either turn old people into food or into mechas who will one day enslave us all.
Soylent majority, yeah.
Soylent.
That's a line from Futurama.
Is
it's
it?
Not
oh,
mine.
Okay, yeah. Cool, because that might have been a title.
I'm not that cool.
I'm not that cool. That might have been a title if you didn't say that, so thank
Sorry.
You. Thank you for being upfront about it. But the quest for a new title marches on, huh? So yeah, but like that, like that whole notion of turning people into mechas to suit your whims sounds like something that is definitely from the expansion. Dennis, can you corroborate?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't have any mechs.
That is
back
a fact.
Back in my day.
Everybody kept their limbs.
Yeah,
yeah.
We had to kill uphill both ways. Yeah. Huh. Are you digging the story? Like, is this all one big playthrough that you're doing, right? Or is this exhausting your possibilities?
Yeah, so it's kind of insane because it's much longer than a Civilization game. Like, you can sit down and play a game. Well, it depends what Civ. But if Civilization Revolution, it's much longer than that game. Because you can sit down and play a round of that in maybe like 2 or 3 hours.
Right.
Like, this has been going for, I don't know, maybe a solid 30 hours or so. 30 plus. I don't know. It's been going, it's been going for however many weeks I've been talking about it. So, yeah. But it's good, though. It's not like a bad thing. I guess I got some resolution on the covert missions, which is, I think, something else that's also in the expansion. But that was fun. That was like a fun kind of like Where is Carmen Sandiego sort of game.
Yeah.
yeah. It was nice how they integrated it. So, yeah. So, I mean, I like it. It makes me feel bad, though, because it seems like the original one, I would like to play it, I guess, to see how it plays, because it seems like it would be kind of sparse after playing this one, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this one feels like a complete game, but I know that's just because of my perspective of how I was introduced to it. So.
Right.
So, random question, are there any downsides to turning someone into a mech? Like, what negative effects does a mech have?
So all your troops have upgrade trees, and it depends on their class. And the way it works is I think there's like 7 levels, and you have 2 options at each level of what you can upgrade them with. And unfortunately, it's the same option for everybody, so that kind of makes it less interesting. But if you turn someone into a mech, all those abilities are lost, their regular human abilities, and then there's a new set of mech abilities that they have instead.
So is it new upgrade tree, or does it just branch from however far you've taken them?
It's a brand new one. But whatever level they were at, they will be at that level of the mechs. So if they were at like the sixth tier or whatever, they will, and you amputate them and turn them into a mech, they'll be at the sixth level of the mechs.
Oh. Don't they get a like one ability from the original class or based on the original class?
I can't say. I don't know. Yeah. If it is, it's not a significant one because I have not noticed it, I guess. So the person I turned into a mech was a support class, but I don't know what ability they would have.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. So why have you only turned one into a mech? Is it just now you got the technology to do it, or is it hard to do?
I got like a good diverse array of troops. I have two heavy troopers that have healing, so those guys are really good. I usually like to send them in first because they can take a lot of damage and it'll all come off in a couple rounds. And I have a mech, and I have, what's it called? It's like one of their robots. I forget what it's called. A Shiv, that's the name of it. Shiv is the name of one of their robots for some reason. But it like the mech, is something that you can upgrade by like building new parts and like attaching new parts to it. So it's also kind of like a powerhouse. And then I have a sniper, which basically if you're like a pro at this game, you just roll with snipers essentially. And you have everyone unlock the perk where they can shoot at anybody in their line of sight that any other player can see. So they can shoot people from all the way across the map if they can see them. So yeah, so I have one of those people with that ability, but yeah.
See, it's interesting. I found the class, and I think we talked about this last time, I found the class is really well balanced. Maybe the support was a little, you know, not as great, but the heavy for sure, and then also the assault for sure, I saw as just as valuable as the snipers.
See, the heavy was the person I never wanted on my team.
Really?
Because you need them corpses.
But you get to a point where the enemies are strong enough that a rocket blast won't kill them, and you get five of those enemies at once, and that's where the heavy really shines. Plus, getting rid of cover is also incredibly valuable.
Yeah, the rocket I think is the core of why the heavy is good in XCOM.
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because
they also have an ability like the sniper, or maybe this is unique. I can't remember. As long as they don't move, they can fire both turns.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay.
So just like as a base, they do double damage if you're not moving.
Okay, I know the mechs can do that as well. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah, so it's a cool game. If you are into strategy games, you should play it.
Fraxis knows their shit.
Dennis, you should play the expansion just so I get your perspective on it.
There's a multiplayer mode that I never touched. Like an adversarial, the idea is that each ability for each class costs a certain number of points, and everyone gets a fixed number of points to spend. And so you start out, you know, you build your team, and you can build whatever kind of team you want, but everything's worth a different point value versus, you know, related to how powerful it is. Which is a really smart idea because then they can kind of scale in real time the effectiveness of different units. But anyway, and so you kind of build your team and then you play a game just like you normally would, only against an intelligent opponent.
Okay. Yeah, we could do that. I'd be down.
So I was very intrigued. I don't know how that works with the expansion, but that would be pretty cool.
We should also open that up to any of our listeners, if any of them play XCOM, to hit us up. Yeah.
Word. Neat. X comment it up.
Onward.
So, can I do mine next?
Sure.
Yeah.
So, I feel terrible because I cannot find the name of the person who gave me this game, but it was a gift from a listener over the holidays, and for some reason, it's not showing up in Gmail or Steam where I searched for it. I think it was the same person who gave me Starbound, actually, too. So, if I at all see this, I will rectify it in a future episode, but thanks, because I really, really, really like Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons.
Aha! Aha! Okay.
Yeah. So I played all of it tonight. I got off work. I made myself some tacos for dinner, gruffled that real quick, and I was like, I'm going to play this 3-hour game and talk about it on the show. God damn it. So I forget. Dennis, maybe you talked about it a little bit because somebody like came to you and said, you guys really should play this for the show.
Yeah, it was recommended. I have not actually played it though.
Oh shit. So this is like brand spanking new. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
it is free on PlayStation Plus now, so.
Oh yeah. So eventually you will talk about it.
Eventually. Yeah.
Yeah, but I scooped you. Yeah. Yeah. No, I just
cut my stees.
Bite your stees. You don't cut stees. Either bite or snake. Come on, get it together. Get your shit in line. All right.
No. I'm sorry.
No, it's real good. Notably on the network, I believe the first episode of Check It Out Comrade was about this game. I didn't listen to it because even though I know they have a no spoiler policy, at least for the parts that are marked no spoiler, I didn't want to have it, you know, laid bare for me inadvertently. So I'm going to be very careful about it. But there's a lot of literature and a lot of people talking about it in generalities out there. And I want to, at the very least, make a case for why somebody who has access to this, be it through PSN or through Steam, like I played it on my laptop just plugged into my TV. As I do now, which is really fun to like play PC games from my couch. That is the way to do it. and it's on like Xbox Live. But I don't know that I have played a game recently that was such an awesome melding of gameplay mechanics, like the experience of actually controlling it, and the story that it was trying to convey and the things that it was trying to make you feel. So the idea is you're controlling two characters at the same time. So it's like a single player co-op game. It's like a single player co-op version of Eco, right?
Huh.
Where with the left analog stick, you are controlling the big brother, and with the right analog stick, you're controlling the little brother. And you have actions that they can do on the left and right triggers, and you're controlling both of them at the same time. And as you go along, there are environmental puzzles. Most of what you're doing is trying to traverse the environment to get closer to your goal. And there are some times where it repeats itself, but usually it's giving you something novel to do with trying to, you know, maneuver both of them. And like, it's very judicious and it says stuff about their characters, like when one of them can do something and the other one can't. So like, because the big brother is bigger, he can do things that are more physically difficult, whereas the little brother, being more lithe, is able to be sneakier and get through different places. So the way that it forces you to separate and then join back together in order to progress, that tells a little story in and of itself. And it very much is kind of this awesome and beautiful story about like relying on each other, right?
That's nice when gameplay intersects story like
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah. And just like it hits it like head on, like gameplay in this instance, T-Bones story. So, yeah. Yeah. But it's beautiful. And especially earlier on when you are like in civilization. So it's kind of a medieval fantasy feel to it, like a fable almost.
Really? I just assumed it was in like a modern setting.
Nope. No, so it's definitely fantasy style, you know, like you are like these two, not like commoners, but like villagers, right? And I don't want to say any more about the story because blah, blah, blah. You know, the fact that I compared it to Eco means that there's going to be tragedy. You can draw your own conclusions from that. But it's great. So, you know, it is fantasy style. I forget where I was going with that. Shit.
you were talking about the setting of it.
Yeah. So there is this. Okay, cool. So like at the beginning, you're like in a village, and I love it more and more even nowadays. But like when a game just gives you a be human button. So when you encounter other people or like animals and stuff, each of the two characters will have a different reaction or interaction with whatever you press, you know, press up against. So, like, the older brother is the one who's carrying the map to wherever you're going to. So, like, the younger brother is more mischievous. So, if you walk up and interact with this person with the younger brother, he'll do, like, a little prank or, like, you know, something, you know, kid-like, you know, childish. Whereas the older one will come up and say, like, hey, we're looking for this thing. And they will point in the direction that you ought to go.
Oh, nice.
But it even goes, like, further beyond that. So, like, you see a scarecrow and you walk up and, you know, the younger brother will pose like it, you know, like alongside of it, like, oh, I'm the scarecrow, right? Can come over here and perch. Whereas the older brother will like do a little bird call and then the bird will fly away. Or you walk up to somebody who's playing the harp and like, again, just storytelling through whatever it does. The younger brother will play like a little tune on the harp and the person will like clap. The older brother will just like donk, 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 donk. And the person will laugh. Right, it's kind of like, oh, so one of them's like talented in one way and not in the other. So pretty cool. And it's also notable that there is no dialogue in the game. It's all kind of in Simlish a little bit. So it's like a vaguely Nordic gibberish, like those Vikings from before.
So, yeah. Would you say then?
Brody group in der saga swoop.
Is it safe to say that the story is much more about the relationship between the brothers than necessarily the quest that they're on?
It's all intertwined, I would say. But yeah, like the story definitely more so, but the narrative is intertwined as well. It's beautiful. Like it's such a small investment for you know, like both time and money wise. Like it's great.
Yeah.
Like I got real like Journey vibes from it, honestly. A little bit, like maybe it wasn't as like grandiose and affecting, but like it was more personal and small in a way that Journey was not. And you know, they can hit those different notes and both can coexist, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now this was came out last year, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of Journey, how did the game do on the reward or the award circuit?
You know what? I didn't really pay attention. So I have no idea. I can't answer that question.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, everyone I've heard talk about has been, you know, just glowingly positive. Mm-hmm. But it seems like I can't think of hearing of it, winning a awards.
But there's also, like, to what extent does that matter? So,
right, yeah. Right, yeah.
I think David brings it up as an example of how those awards can just totally miss things.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Like, so it may be the case that Journey got a lot of attention because it was, like, a platform-specific, and it was touted as, like, this is the reason that PSN exists, this is the reason, like, or a reason to own a PlayStation 3, therefore. Right. Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's super good. The music is good. Just overall and in general, it gets a wholehearted recommendation from me. Yeah, it takes about 3 hours to play. You can budget like us sitting, and you know, like Journey, I would say that is the way to play it. So
yeah, and more, that's all I want out of a game is, you know, a number of hours attached to it is meaningless to me.
Mm-hmm.
If you can give me a complete experience in 3 hours,
yeah,
and it's a game, then do it.
it is a neat little story, and it does everything it sets out to do.
Nice. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. And that's all I have. So it's been this past week has mostly been, oh my God, I have to read all of the issues of Berserk and also watch all of the anime of Berserk. So. So yeah, and also beat Kingsfield and all blah blah blah, but I'm slowly getting ahead, so I will bring more to the table eventually, but Brothers is a huge get. Yeah
That's cool.
Yeah. David, how about you?
Sure. I succumbed to Dennis's evil influence and re-upped my PlayStation Plus account.
One of us.
Google exactly. Gobble. Doesn't make any sense. I just talked about this last night on Bonfireside Chat for the Berserk. It makes no sense. Google, what's Google Gobble? You know what you're referencing, right?
No.
It's a movie from the 1930s called Freaks. It's a crazy and scary movie.
I've heard of Freaks. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that was what I was referencing. Yep, I assumed it was like a Pixar movie.
A bunch of stuff makes reference to it. Like I initially found out about it through the Simpsons. You know, just because the one of us is so salient. It's kind of like that Orson Welles peas commercial. The Orson Welles flying, like the recording session of Orson Welles late in life, like in the 80s, being reduced to recording voiceover for pea, like frozen peas.
Oh, gotcha.
And him just like flying off the handle at his director for over directing him, and like for the script copy being just complete shit. But like just that, for some reason, there are these really salient things that like all these animators that made cartoons that I consumed when I was young referenced, and therefore I know them in like this crazy Nick at Night appendix memory that I have.
If you watch any of like the Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Looney Tunes, they're all exactly like that. It's totally that way. I think the specific one I'm thinking of is Toy Story when they're at the vending machine, like the claw machine.
Yeah.
I think they have a One of Us reference.
Maybe.
Or something I now know is a reference.
Yeah.
Huh.
We just both hung at the same time, and we also stole from David, who was going to talk about something from PSN.
Tell us about PS Plus, David.
So what's probably less surprising is I've been playing DMC a good deal.
Okay.
Yes.
I really, really am enjoying their kind of the new take on it. As Dennis kind of got into the purgatory conceit or whatever is really, really well done. Just this weird, it's, kind of an abstract take on the real world. That's really, really cool. And I really like kind of, I don't know if they almost kind of, you have like a filter effect where, everything, becomes sort of misty, and it's really, really cool. And I'm actually, the big thing I was kind of suspicious of was kind of the recreation of Dante as a character. And I think they did a really good job. I know you like this as well, right, Des?
Yeah, it's still Dante. He's just slightly more emotionally intelligent is the way that I put it.
Sure. And the other thing that struck me is it did not at all strike me as like a revision of the character so much as it did, the original Devil May Cry came out at least 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So roughly 10 years ago, in a decade, people tend to change the way they cut their hair and dress. And so it struck me much more as like the way someone living a decade ago that picked out the clothes from clothes and haircut from Devil May Cry 1, if they were living now a decade later, would pick out the clothes and haircut and stuff like that for DMC. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I follow.
The aesthetic has grown with it.
Say that again?
The aesthetic has grown with it.
Right. I guess my concern was when they said, when they're saying that, that was what was cool back then, and then now we're going to do what's cool now. I feel like My concern was it was going to be, just a completely different character, where I feel like it's more the same character, just, updated.
The same personality expressed through the filter of a different decade.
Right, exactly. I'm convinced, but I need to say this.
I'm convinced that, the majority of people have this weird idea where there was some kind of weird time quake that happened around 2005, and it that everything froze then for people's sensibility. And as people tend to shake loose from that, and like catch up, like anybody who is still stuck there is like, what the fuck is happening? Like, I don't understand. And I say this as somebody who is totally out of touch with anything approaching a trend. But like, whenever I see people like backlashing, you know, like just speaking, like crying foul at anything that tries to like be a little bit more modern, whatever modern is, it's like, oh, just like we switched millenniums and got a couple years into it. And everybody was like, I'm going to plant here. And
yeah,
you know, most of the music I listen to is stuff that I knew about in 2005, but so I'm a hypocrite. But
see, and I think that's, you know, kind of what I'm getting at is I feel like where some of that comes from is a concern that, you know, sometimes when, you know, they update something, they'll just, you know, kind of throw the original fans under the bus. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's kind of the concern, whereas I feel like this feels very much not like that.
So if you look at something else that has spans, you know, several decades, like, say, Final Fantasy, looking at, you know, there was such a break, but like Final Fantasy VI compared to 13 and the examples, how much of that update is because they were able to render so much more detail? I mean, obviously, leaps and bounds, and you know, it's like apples to protozoa comparison, you know. And how much of that is like, okay, we need to update, and like fantasy meets sci-fi has changed, and different designers' tastes and such. Like, does that bear out? Like, yeah, does that comparison bear out over the course of DMC, which has been around for just a little bit over a decade now?
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. Cole, you do not make any sense. Is an acceptable answer? So.
Well, I mean, that's always. But.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that we always went to our second response.
it's a tango with somebody who does not know the steps. Yeah.
I think it is a valid point. Like you said, as kind of obviously they were able to do more with the graphics and everything between the first Devil May Cry and this new one. I would say that whereas Final Fantasy has more liberty to change between kind of the different worlds of the games.
Yeah.
And interacting with a different, completely different set of characters. And it's like, hey, this one is more, you know, diesel punk, or this one is, you know, has, you know, they put their own twist to it. They have more freedom. The artists with Devil May Cry were a little more constrained in that these were the same characters. And that, you know, reined in a little bit, but there definitely was that modernization and kind of new interpretation to it.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah. I did like, there's, at least in the first level, I don't know if this continues, there are a couple of, kind of shout outs also. The most obvious one is the brief moment where I don't know what it's supposed to be that's like blows over, but you know, something, you know, there's some big explosion and something blows over and lands on Dante's head that temporarily makes him look like he has his previous hairstyle, you know, the white and, you know, kind of shag haircut. And he, you know, looks in the mirror for a couple of minutes, then never in a million years, and walks off. So that was good. And I like that they keep the tradition of every game starting with his house getting destroyed.
Not again.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's pretty good.
I would say if I had to find something, One other thing, one real minor thing, is I really like they kind of make the character model is a little bit lanky in terms of, you know, how they did how they modeled them, and I really like they very subtly translate that to his movements, where awkward's not quite the correct term for someone who's like spends most of the game doing like backflips and crap, but you know, they animate him with just a slight awkwardness that fits with, you know, kind of his build and, you know, sort of the body language.
No, you're totally right. I hadn't put that together before, but when you say that, like the basic, the most basic combo that you can do with his most basic weapon. Like the last swing of it, he swings so hard that it kind of throws him off balance a little bit. And right. It's this great like visual feedback of like, oh, you could have done so much more. Or like, oh, that's the most basic thing you could do.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Like Ninja Theory is so awesome at telling those little stories through minor details and animation. And I base this really only on Enslaved. But like that seems to be what their studio is focused on doing.
Right, exactly. I would say if I had to find things I didn't like, they changed it from, you know, his father being a demon, his mother being human, to his father being a demon, his mother being an angel. Yeah. And I feel like that's slightly weaker. I feel like, and also they now refer to him as a Nephilim, which ironically, he was a Nephilim before, he is not now. So that's just, I mean, you know, kind of ironic. But and then the other thing is they changed up Ebony and Ivory very extensively, and the new version just isn't nearly as cool as the previous ones. So so I really like all that. On the other hand, the controls for the game are completely awful. are just horrible.
So everything about the game is great except for the experience of playing the game.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh man, that is.
See, but you're in the first level, right?
I beat the second level actually.
Okay, so it's
where they suddenly give you like everything.
Yeah. So, well, I'll let you say your piece. Sorry. I'm like, yeah, go ahead. No, shutting up.
my issue with it, I would say on the whole, you know, there's some minor things like the dodge mechanic isn't very responsive, stuff like that. There's some minor things with that. But the big thing is the two big things that Devil May Cry always had that were, you know, kind of the reason I felt it was better from a gameplay standpoint compared to like God of War is that the combos were always very easy to execute. The, you know, the difficulty in the game was not in the button presses, it was in the decision making. And similarly, it was always, you had a relatively small number of, you know, combos, actions you could perform compared to most games, but each of them had a very defined purpose, you know, why, when you'd use them. And that's just not the case in this one. You know, they really, really doubled down on, most of the combos center around, like what cadence you enter the button presses with, but it's very difficult when you're in the middle of a combo to know where you're at. And then the big thing is your dash abilities, instead of just being forward and attack, you now have to do this awkward, like double tap with the control stick. And so you just can't do it responsively.
Yeah. So. Those are legitimate complaints. I was about to be like fanboy, shout you down, and like, no, you can't say that. It's true that that is a definite departure from what they've done in the past. And in some instances, especially the dash attack, it is more awkward. I think what I would say is they made a conscious choice to make the combo system work across all your weapons. And so as you get more weapons, the idea is that you can use all, I think what turns out being all five of your weapons in one combo. And it's based on that cadence of button presses. So like your first two taps are your, you know, start the combo. And then you can either finish the combo just by, you know, mashing, or if you pause, you can continue the combo with a different one or switch to another weapon. And then it's that kind of, you know, every couple of taps, there's a pause where you can choose what to do next. But that does, you know, sacrifice some of the contextual movement that you would have.
Right. And I think for me that there's a couple of things with that. One of it is, you know, I've gotten, you know, the battle axe and the scythe. Mm-hmm. And I simply don't like the battle axe. I will never use it unless forced. You know, I just don't like slow weapons. Mm-hmm. And I feel like in the previous games, you basically, you picked which two weapons you liked and rolled with that. Whereas I feel like in this game, it tries to force you to use the different abilities, whether you like them or not. Hmm. Yeah. And I feel like the other thing is, I understand what you're saying. I definitely agree. I think that's what they're going for. I just feel like, you know, if you wanted to make God of War, make God of War. Don't make Devil May Cry. You know?
Here's my question. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. But does this take the thing from Devil May Cry 3, Angel's Tear, Spiral Stairway, Heaven Edition, where you have you know, different stances? So you've got Joker, Toker, and Midnight Smoker, you know, like that you can switch between. Like, is like, because that to me seemed like something on the level of this added complication that you guys are talking about. But like, does this have those different stances?
No, it incorporates pretty much everything from them. Although, generally speaking, some of them in like a little bit different ways. But yeah, it incorporates all the things you can do from those, I believe.
Huh. Yeah. But, so like, you can always dash like the Trickster. So that's just you. You'll always have that no matter what. From the Guardsman, I think it was, you can always counter an attack if you swing at the right time. So it's a timing thing rather than a special ability. For the Swordmaster, every weapon has a special attack that's on the circle button.
Although, for example, Prop Shredder is now no longer part of Rebellion's moveset. It's now part of what is the Scythe's Sky moveset?
Yeah. And it's that's the special attack, so it's been incorporated in that way. And then Gunslinger just doesn't really exist anymore. Like, you can do some of the moves by pressing square and X at the same time,
which again is a horrible input strategy.
Yeah, it's that is tough.
I can accept this. There's only one Gunslinger in my heart.
Like I said, the advantage of that, and it's true, that is a negative. The advantage of that is that it's much easier to string everything together. And once you get past the learning curve of how to do that, it just becomes really, really fun.
Right. And that's what I'll say, like, for me, very much, this is going to be a game that is, and from a gameplay standpoint, entirely lives or dies based on whether I can ever learn it. I don't mean that, you know, facetiously, but it's, you know, it's just like, you know, to kind of give an example, like, I think the Battlefield games were great, but I don't like them because I could never learn them. Like, you know, I played them and I never learned them. You know, kind of what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think Metal Gear is an example I think of as one of the games where it took a while to figure out all the controls, but once you did, it was worth it.
But you acquire fluency. Like, in all of these examples, there's a fluency to it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not your standard platform where you know X is jump and, you know, square is attack and, you know, so forth. It's not codified.
I did want to the storyline so far is really good, and I feel like that is a good use of doing a restart. I like Dante's comments overall, particularly the funhouse level was kind of entertained me. I did get kind of annoyed, you know, very early on. There's a whole bunch of points where, you know, the character that's going to be the obligate, like, female, like, pseudo sidekick character is trying to get you to come with her, and you're just refusing it. It's just like, shut up and go with the exposition.
So I will ask, because we have talked about this for a little while, do we have any final thoughts on DMC before we move on to Dennis's games?
Oh, fair. No, I said what I wanted. Sorry, David. I started biting into your steez there. No, wait, stealing your steez. Frying your steez.
But biting is fine. Snaking is also acceptable. Stealing, you're on thin ice. Whatever you said before, no.
Frying, I think I said.
Frying your steez?
You monster!
Okay, so no more thoughts on DMC, David?
No, I think
okay, I will take your 4 seconds of silence as a no. Sorry, I've got to be hard on time, man. Man, I don't like being a host. Ben, do you want to step in?
Now you know how I feel. Yeah. No.
That's funny.
Get anxiety with three of my friends.
Well, you know, this is not a safe place, so that is perfectly reasonable. Oh, Dennis, what you been playing?
Yeah, obviously more DMC, but we talked about that.
Yeah.
I picked up a little mobile game. It's like Sony TV Entertainment or something like that. It was some weird like subdivision of Sony put out a game called Suits and Swords, and it's an RPG that uses blackjack as its like key combat mechanic.
Okay.
So yeah, it's just a curiosity. I picked it up, and it's pretty fun. I'm partial to blackjack. Like if I go to a casino, that's my game. And it's the perfect, you know, length of gameplay loop for a mobile game that you can play a round of blackjack in, you know, what, seconds. Like it takes no time at all. And the idea is, you know, the standard game of blackjack, and whoever's closest 21 is the one who does the damage.
Okay.
And so, you know, you try to, it takes, you know, 3 or 4 wins versus an opponent, to finish them off.
Yep. So it's strip blackjack, except that you're stripping off your opponent's limbs.
can you choose to hit or stay or anything?
You choose to hit or stand, and you know, standard blackjack rules, you can hit as many times as you want as long as you don't bust.
Yeah.
The wrinkle that they give though is, you know, everyone has magic abilities, your spells or your special abilities, which can modify your points.
Yeah.
So you might get a spell that is +1. And so if you get a 20, you can cast +1 to get yourself to a 21. Or they have, you know, like a -4, which I keep in my inventory just as a, crap, you know, I went, you know, too high. I busted, but I can pull myself back down and at least stay in the game. Yeah. So those are well implemented. They're kind of one time use items, and it, you know, it is a money making venture. So the idea is that you would pay to get more of these items.
Ugh, that's so gross, Dennis. Why?
But hold on. I was going to say that I have not paid a cent, and the game has been perfectly, you know, playable and well balanced without them.
Yeah.
So if you wanted 21 every time, you could pay some money and get, you know, a whole arsenal of cards.
$400.
Yeah, a whole arsenal of spells to always hit 21 and to never lose. But as it is, it's, you know, you kind of rely on your knowledge of blackjack to say, okay, they've got a 6, so that, you know, there's high likelihood they'll bust.
Yeah.
I'll stand at a 17 and just hope that they go over.
So like if you just know the basic strategy, you're fine.
Yeah. And again, it takes, you know, a minute to play a battle.
Right.
And I'm just a big fan of anything that is kind of a small gameplay loop like that, that you can then give, kind of give meaningful progression to through kind of an RPG setting. So I think I talked about Rollers of the Realm a while back, which is a pinball RPG, which is awesome. Yeah. And then there's all these match-3 kind of RPGs in essence. Like Jewel Mania, or I don't know how much Candy Crush is a, or Candy, yeah, Candy Crush is an RPG, but the idea that there's this, you know, progression over time.
Like Puzzle Quest is the example.
Oh, yeah,
that, right?
Yeah. Puzzle Quest is the perfect example. So it's in that vein, and I'm a big fan of that sort of thing, just because it you know, adds an extra layer of depth to something that is already enjoyable on its own in short bursts.
Yeah.
So, you know, not only did I play and I wasted 3 minutes, but I played and, hey, I got to the next level, and that'll be there waiting for me when I get back.
Nice.
Blackjack is as good of a randomization as, like, I would say, you know, dice rolls. In fact, probably better, you know, just because there is a certain amount of strategy associated with it, aside from just, like, your build that you go in. So, like, because it puts that pressure on it, it's, like, it's better than, like, some of these RPGs that I've seen, which are, like, oh, you know, your combat is determined by a slot machine. And, like, you press the buttons to go, which, like, it is random, but because you press the button to stop the reels, you feel like it's your fault. Right.
Yeah,
you know, like that. This is the first example of this that I've heard of is like remarkable enough because that makes total sense to me.
Yeah, I'm surprised it hasn't been done before. Not everything is completely well thought out. So there's an entire category of spells, which are attack spells, where you can add points to your opponent's hand.
Ooh.
But the problem is that you do that before their turn.
So it's just the hope that you make them bust, essentially.
Yeah, and unless they're dealt like a 20 with their two cards, which granted is relatively, you know, likely.
Do you see what they're dealt?
No, you don't. You only see one of their cards, just like in real blackjack versus the house. Yeah. So you could see that and choose to play an attack card and just hope that they have enough points in their base hand to put them over no matter what they do.
So really that just rolls deep for whoever knows the percentages or is counting cards like you ought to, because can you count to 10, you dumb shit? Just do it. Make all the money in the world. If you're not afraid of being kicked out, if you're not afraid of being dragged out by hired goons, just count cards. It's so easy.
Single deck blackjack, man.
Ugh.
But it's, you know, so theoretically it has a use, but it's just, you know, only if you have like a +5 attack or something like that, and you never see those. So that's a kind of a useless part of the game. But overall, you know, it's a fun idea. It's a nice little time waster. So that's a fun one. Suits and Swords. I've also been playing Monaco, and I think a couple of people have experience with this game. David, have you actually played it yet?
I actually have not gotten around to playing it.
Oh, okay. Well.
And even though I have an OmniFocus event, to play Monaco, I have not yet. So,
okay, well, I'll give it just the very high-level treatment. I like it. It's fun and quirky and distills stealth down to the most basic levels. Mm-hmm. My only complaint is that while the visual design, which sounds at surface level super intuitive and cool, is actually really hard to, I guess, look at, to learn how to read.
I've heard that. So, like, it's disorienting, right?
Very disorienting. So the idea is that anything that's in your line of sight, you're actually seeing. Anything that's out of your line of sight shows up as a blueprint of the place, which is, you know, that's a really cool
You've
idea.
Never played a roguelike, a real roguelike, have you?
Yeah, so it's like Teleglitch or something like that. like some bullshit where it actually factors in what you're receiving real-time feedback on, right?
Yeah. But that just means as you move around, there are constantly these stripes playing across the entire map of what you can see and what you can't. And that's super disorienting and super annoying. It doesn't ruin the game. Like I said, the game is still pretty fun. But it is, you kind of have to learn how to interact with it.
You don't look at the pixels. You look between the pixels.
Yeah. So it's fun. The other thing I like is how simple it is. So really, you're only using the WSAD to move your character around, and 90% of the actions are just you holding towards the object you want to interact with. And so really, it's pretty close to a 4-button game. You can get, you know, weapons that you can use the mouse to aim, but that's, you know, you don't have to use any of those. So it's very, very simple, and it's a good time. It's just really hard to visually keep track of everything.
Do you feel like with a little bit more time and investment that you would get just more fluency to it? Like we were talking about with DMC, or is it just a matter of like, this is always going to be disorienting?
I think I will. I haven't yet. And I've played, you know, I've played a solid, you know, seven or eight levels of the game. And so it seems to me like, again, on surface level, that sounds so intuitive. It's like, hey, you can see an outline of the things that you aren't in your line of sight, and you see a full version of everything that is. But it's just when you're trying to move quickly through the level, like if you're being chased or something, having that constantly changing is very disorienting.
Yeah.
I wonder, though, some of it, you know, I've read, you know, it seems like everyone compares it, you know, kind of to what's the Keystone Cops type thing. I wonder if there's a certain degree to which that's intentional in that, you know, a lot of the things I've read say basically the flow of the game is you do stealth, then you get seen, and then it just becomes like a Looney Tunes game.
Yeah, it's a Lucy's Kit, yeah.
Yeah, no, and that is accurate. So I'll forgive it on that spectrum. It's just, you know, I don't get motion sick watching games. I don't think this would ever cause motion sickness in anyone, but it's a similar kind of like, you know, too much information coming at me right now.
That
hasn't prevented me from still enjoying it. And who knows, maybe if, you know, another eight levels and I'll have it down pat.
Yeah.
Huh. So, yeah.
Monica, what's yours is mine.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything else?
Those are my two, no.
Okay. Well, I have three here. You said DMC.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, technically three, yeah. Technically. Son of Sparta mode, man. Crushingly difficult.
Oh, man. You, Dennis of the hair shirt.
Yeah.
Just walking around, taking it easy for us sinners, or taking it, like, challenging for us sinners.
Yeah.
There we go. All right.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you to participate with us. And Dennis, since you asked the question, I will ask you to recite the question so we have context for the things that are going to happen after I say this thing.
Yeah, sure. So my question is about something that you honestly probably don't think about much if it's done, you know, right, which is, what is your favorite music from a video game? You know, so soundtracks and such. And I specified non-licensed music, although, you know, if someone had written in with licensed music, I probably still would have allowed it.
Five pages of Grand Theft Auto Vice City and also Guitar Hero and Rock Band.
Like, someone sent us something. I will read it. Yes.
Oh, man.
But man, a lot of people sent us something tonight.
Yeah, no, this is fertile ground. So in the interest of getting through this in a reasonable amount of time, what I'm going to say is we will read all of their responses and then do our own at the end.
Okay.
Yeah. So to get things started, I will say Carlo has said the best one from a game I haven't played would be the Dust Force soundtrack. So since you haven't played it, I assume it was like from a Humble Bundle, which is a great way to get soundtracks. Like, mm-hmm. If you buy the Humble Bundle, you get those soundtracks. And for me, that's like, okay, I'll listen to that at work. Thank you for giving that to me for the, you know, $25 that I paid for this thing. So yeah. But I will say, like, having played a little bit of Dust Force, you know, like I talked about last week, mm-hmm. it is pretty good. Ben, what's Phil say?
Phil says it's a close one, but I'd have to go with the first game that truly made me appreciate music in video games, and that would be Final Fantasy 2/4. So Final Fantasy 1/2. Once I heard the opening drum roll and the Red Wings, I fell in love with this game, and the soundtrack stayed amazing to the end.
Yeah, yeah. Like hearing that, they bomb. Yeah, definitely.
Oh yeah,
rock hard. No, it's really good. And like, so something that comes up on my work playlist of instrumental music is the Final Fantasy IV Celtic Moon album, which is like this crazy weird Irish orchestra that plays Final Fantasy IV songs.
Nice.
That I got when I was like in second grade. Like, I was like, oh man, I love this game so much. The music is so good. Mom, can you buy me this from the back of this magazine? And I got it, and I have this CD that is like way scratched up, and like the CD rip is so like skippy that it's almost unlistenable, but I still hear it because there are these like crazy arrangements of the Final Fantasy 4/2, therefore 2 soundtracks. Yeah, yeah, that is definitely a pro listen.
Nice.
Even in the like the DS/iPhone, iPod, or iPad version, it's real good. Yeah.
Cool.
Cool. Let's see here, David. What's Sean say?
Sure. Sean says, I've listened to Bastion soundtrack over and over. The music for that really enhanced the game. The main theme for Kingdom Hearts 2 and the music from Metal Gear Solid, however, really gets me. Also, when I was playing D&D, my DM would theme scenes with music and got a lot of it from Overclocked Remix, which is all fan remixes of video game themes.
Yeah, OCR is real cool. Like, if you have a favorite game, like for this music, go there and check it out, because a lot of it is bullshit techno, but like some of it is like a flamenco reimagining of a song from Super Mario 2, which is like an awesome thing to have in your library. So, like, it makes complete sense to do that.
There need to be more remixes of songs that are not remixed into techno. Like, you know.
I agree. Don't worry.
But yeah, and that'll come up later for my point, but we'll get there.
Yeah, and I'm actually gonna have to double back to this for mine as well. So
yeah. Dennis, what's Jala say?
Jala says Lunar Eternal Blue is an old favorite. Planescape Torment, The Binding of Isaac, and a really old one, Legacy of the Wizard on NES.
Yeah, so I don't know the Legacy of the Wizard, but those middle two, Planescape Torment and The Binding of Isaac, really good. I like those a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like Torment more so, just because it is more of an ambient kind of like, oh, this is somebody blowing across something, and also weird drums. Like the Fallout soundtrack. I think it might be the same guy actually who does both of those. Torment is a fantastic soundtrack, and The Binding of Isaac is like that nice little weird, intersection of creepy and also video game that works. I'm real excited about like the reboot that Binding of Isaac is going to have here pretty soon across a bunch of platforms.
Yeah.
Mostly because it will be more stable than the Flash version, but yeah.
Isn't he adding a whole bunch of content for that?
I think so, maybe.
Like a whole bunch of visual styles. Like you can pick a visual style, and he's done like a really, really 8-bit and then a, not a sepia tone, but like I think he went through and did a whole bunch of kind of aesthetic studies on it.
I don't know that he has done like more than one. I know that he put it to a vote and people picked the 16-bit version of the graphics.
Well, like, maybe that was it. There were a bunch to vote on.
Yeah, yeah. Which I'm perfectly fine because that is, because that game is so influenced by Zelda anyway, that makes sense to me to make it like A Link to the Past, except with babies and poop. So, yeah. Let's see here. Dennis on, not our Dennis, but Dennis Fournette on Facebook
Someone
says,
else with my name.
Oh,
awesome!
No.
He
has one less N. So there we go. Robotech Battle Cry, which I do not know and therefore cannot address. I'm sorry, Dennis. I'm sure it's awesome, but yes,
it's actually open in YouTube, and I got the call right as I was about to listen to it. So,
oh yeah,
yeah. Afterwards,
afterwards. Okay, yeah, yeah. Who did I ask to go second?
Me.
You. So say what, James.
James Robinson says, Whizball on the C64 for the amazing Sid chiptunes. Rentless for the first orchestral music I heard in games. It was one of the first couple games, I think. Finally, the DEFCON soundtrack, which I used to relax me and send me off to sleep, trying not to think about the game subject.
Yeah, so the DEFCON soundtrack, which is like a lullaby for a planet that is about to be like put to sleep with nuclear winter.
Some people count sheep, some people count death tolls.
some people want to listen to the world burn.
I just want to know if they keep like that woman weeping in the background in the soundtrack.
Yeah. man. Eventually you get inured to it and you just don't hear it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Whizball thing, like I forget, James, if you were the one who like wrote in with a bunch of the C64 stuff, but like people who grew up in Europe just had this exposure to a bunch of Commodore 64 and Amiga soundtracks that we just didn't hear in America with the way that things shook out for us with DOS and Nintendo and whatnot. But like apparently the sound, you know, not apparently, I know this, the sound technology on those systems that they had over there prevalently was just fucking nuts. Yeah. So Whizball, you know, definitely. I think that you were the person who wrote about that back in the video game music episode of Watch Out for Fireballs. Yeah, Whizball. I remember listening to that, and it is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David, what's Dustin say?
Yeah, Dustin says, if I had to choose an all-time favorite, it would be Donkey Kong Country for SNES. I played just to listen to the music after the game had nothing left to offer. DKC 2 and 3 were also great. A few others would be Resident Evil 1 and 2, Silent Hill 1 to 3, since I've listened hundreds of hours worth of their OST. What is OST?
Original soundtrack.
Yeah.
Original soundtrack. Okay. Alone while studying, lying in bed, or while working on my game in RPG Maker.
Let us know when your game is done.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Is Donkey Kong Country, is that the soundtrack? It kind of had, you know, used a lot of like ambient jungle noises kind of mixed into the background.
Yeah, like crazy like kookaburras in the background and such.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it definitely lent to the aesthetic in a game that had only the aesthetic to lean on. So
I'm curious. I've never played these games, but Silent Hill 1 to 3, I cannot imagine the scenario where that is like relaxing, like study music.
It's a piano, right?
It's pretty good. So Akira Yamaoka, who did like those soundtracks, and he did all of them up until like his final one was Shattered Memories. Like a bunch of his stuff was this mixture of, you know, like the ambient, you know, industrial horror stuff, which is horrifying and such. But like the rest of it was this weird like reverby surf rock kind of guitar kind of stuff that just was like a J-pop kind of thing. And like I listened to it to like get shit done at work. Because it is so good.
Also the mandolin in the first Silent Hill.
Oh, yeah. Like with the crazy, what is it? Like Homecoming or whatever? Yeah, I forget what it is. But Hometown. That's the one. Yeah. No, it's super good. And like Silent Hill 1 through 3, you could do a lot worse than listening to those. And I would even say like 4 has an amazing soundtrack as well.
There's one track on Silent Hill 3 where it's just chanting.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really hard listen through.
Yeah, it's like Sunrise or whatever, or Birth or something. I know exactly what you're talking about. And no, it's Prayer. Prayer. Okay, so if you just remove that from your shuffle and you'll be fine, because Silent Hill 3 has, like, you know, Letter to My Future Self and a bunch of other great stuff, you know.
Am I misremembering there being just some really, really pretty piano pieces for Silent Hill 2?
No.
Yeah, that's on point. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. On point, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No. Specifically, Laura's theme, that dun 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 dun.
Yeah. There it is.
Uh-huh. There it is. Those chills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, no, those like definitely with Resident Evil 2. I mean, a lot of great piano in that. With the save theme music and such. Damn, so good. Dennis, what's Robert say?
Robert says, my favorite soundtrack is Chrono Trigger by far, with Bastion being a close second, which is kind of contradictory, I would point out. Chrono Trigger by a mile, but close second, Bastion.
So it means that they're both out there by a mile, right?
Yeah. No, they're like so far ahead of us, right?
Oh, there you go. Okay, yeah. All right. I'll allow it. I can't wait for Transitor from Supergiant Gain, so I can listen to that one, too.
Transistor, yeah.
What'd I say?
You said Transitor? Yeah.
Oh, that's the one who takes public transportation into into work.
He's real mad about town.
I thought that was a Jason Statham movie.
Ah, look at this Transitor. Riding the new subways and the maglev train. Yeah. Riding by the power of electricity. Yeah. No.
Not sure what just happened.
Neither am I.
reduced to 5 deaths a day.
Yeah. No, Chrono Trigger, like, that is pretty close to the Zenith. So there are two trains of thought on, like, late SNES era, you know, like, approaching 32-bit soundtracks, which are, like, is Chrono Trigger or Final Fantasy VI the better soundtrack? And, like, both of them are by Uematsu, except, like, Chrono Trigger had a little bit of an edge with Matsuda. And I'm, like, giving away my answer, like, Matsuda is tits on a Ritz. So, you know, I'm serious, man. It's so good. Like, Matsuda is, like, an awesome composer. And I wish he wasn't, like, relegated to the, like, C-list Squaresoft games. But yeah, Chrono Trigger is pro-click.
Yeah.
Yep. Moving on here, we have Nick Basile, who says he puts in a link for the DuckTales Moon theme, which, you know, is... Again, really, really
speaks
awesome.
For itself.
Yeah, exactly. It does. He says this because it's rocking as hell. I wish it was the theme song to my life. You know, you can make that happen. Like every time you walk into a room, like you just have a cape like James Brown, and somebody takes it off you while you're doing your presentation or whatever, and puts it back on you because you are spiritually weakened. Yeah. So he says he wishes it was his theme. And that his life was exciting enough to warrant it. Also, echoing the Bastion thing, Zio's theme, also known as Build That Wall, which is so good. Like like that is the one, like that is the moment when I say, like, oh, did you get to the song in Bastion? Where it is like the awesome female like country slash folk vocalist doing like this awesome. Yeah, no, it's really good. He says not only is it beautiful, but it's also really cool how it adds so much to the backstory of the world of Bastion. It's just a song that Zia was taught by her father, but listen to the lyrics. It's a war song, something I imagine soldiers would sing while sitting around campfires while on the march. It is wonderful. Like I would even say it's like a spiritual, right? It's like talking about building walls versus digging holes, and your wall is going to be gone before my hole is gone. It's so good, and it's like the reason I bought that soundtrack. I'm sorry, I get so excited about music.
it's a really cool point that, like, and I'm sure someone who's more technically versed in music will correct me, but like the only difference between a dirge and a lullaby is the setting. Yeah. Like something that has that like really sad, melancholy feel to it can be interpreted so differently based on the setting.
Yeah.
And it's almost go ahead. I was going to say Ring Around the Rosies is about people getting like the Black Plague and dying and stuff. That's what this makes me think of.
Yeah. Yeah. And you cannot undersell the performance, like the female vocalist they had for that. So good. And like, it's soulful without being like overly boastful, you know, like it's not like, this is somebody who's like really leaning their back into it. You know, like this is it's genuine. Right. And it feels so good. Fucking love that soundtrack. let's see here. Is it
Christopher
David?
Hare yeah. says yeah. Earthbound is the only correct answer.
Yeah.
So there you have it. We're done.
Sorry, everyone else.
Wipe our hands. Yeah. No. Earthbound, like, so in the final analysis, like after I had played Earthbound and having heard more like retrospectives about music, there's some really experimental stuff in the Earthbound soundtrack that you have to like admire and recognize slash respect-ignize. yeah So good. David, what's Christopher say?
Sure. He says my number one is probably Castlevania 3 Dracula's Curse. There isn't a single song in that soundtrack that isn't killer. Fuck the clock tower. How is that not the best one? I'm not sure what that means, but I enjoyed saying it.
Yeah. Fuck the clock tower.
How is that not the best one? Come on. Open your eyes, sheeple.
I hope the song title is Fuck the Clock Tower.
iTunes like will like censor it, and so it will appear lame. Therefore,
As an honorable mention, or maybe the real number one, I want to say The Lost Crown, a horror adventure game. A stellar game. I love the soundtrack. It's a nice mix of ambient music and creepy acoustic stuff, some of which has, I can't believe I'm going to say this, haunting vocals. Ooh. Scary. All right, guys. actually, it does fit in perfectly with the actual ambience of the game. It's quite easy to get creeped out by just music. It's nice that it doesn't really rely on jump scares, chord strikes, like a lot of horror games. Occasionally, it even lulls you into a false sense of security, and then bam, fucking Ghost City.
Yeah. So The Lost Crown, it's by the Darkling Room, which is a UK developer that is on the Hexcrank list if I ever get around to playing more Hexcrank games.
So Castlevania 3 was pre, like, my involvement with Castlevania. Is that the same kind of, like, techno-ized classical music as the others?
A little bit. Like, so in the NES era, it was more, like, rock style. Okay. So that composer was like, I want to, like, try and mimic electric guitar with the NES sound chip. And that's it went so far as to, like, the Japanese version of that game has a special chip in order to add more more channels to the sound. Like, that is considered to be the definitive version of that soundtrack, even though the game is relatively unchanged between the two of them. Like, nice. C3's soundtrack is, like, bomb.
Yeah, I've got to say, you know, I really enjoyed the, you know, Castlevania as a series, kind of its thing of, you know, taking classical music and doing a more modern, you know, rock or techno or whatever take on it.
Yeah. No, definitely. It really is. And they've only evolved it. Although, like, I worry that they're evolving more towards, like, anime, as opposed to, you know, some of the more prog style stuff, which I, as an insufferable person, enjoy more than. Yeah. Yeah. And Dennis, why don't you round us out with Tim?
Yeah, Tim says, looks like everyone has already covered the obvious answers I had. Earthbound, Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy VI, etc. Instead, I'll say that after playing the demo for VVVVVV, rather than rushing...
Wait,
sure,
that's not...
It's a phone vibrating.
Yeah, on a wood surface, yeah.
Yep. I used to piss teachers off in high school so much by mimicking that sound.
Wait, you can mimic that sound?
Well, yeah. It's more... Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Uh-huh.
I just love the irony of students that would put the phone on silent and then set it on their wooden desk.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you're doing it wrong, dude.
Yeah. Also, when we were all in high school, cell phones were a novelty, and our parents wanted us to have them because 9/11. So,
yeah.
I just like the idea of the vibrate setting, which was, like, meant to be, you know, like, non-intrusive, but was, like, almost as intrusive as a ring.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't characterize him as a friend, but a person who was around my group of friends who every time the phone vibrated in his pocket would just shout, "I'm vibrating."
Oh, man. That's,
by the way, I would like to point out that we got a segue off of this mid comment.
Yep. No, I was gonna bring us back, don't worry.
We had to have one good just random tangent. So.
Yes. So,
sorry, Tim. Thank you for being the vehicle for that tangent.
Yeah. So something about
instead after playing the demo for that game, rather than rushing to click buy on the game, I instead found the website of the composer who did the music and bought the soundtrack. Still listen to it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Cole, you've played that game, right?
Yeah, it's real good.
And the sound?
Yeah. Like, Terry Cavanaugh has good taste. Like, even at just, like, Super Hexagon or Don't Look Back, like, just, like, he gets good people to do shit for his shit. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for coming out in force. Let us go through our personal favorites. I'm going to single you out, David. Go.
Hey, I'm going to take a page from several of these people and kind of shotgun just a little bit.
Kind of what, a little bit?
Shotgun just a little bit, as in give a couple of things, high points. Going back to Sean's thing, Kingdom Hearts 2 didn't do so much for me, but I really liked the theme to Kingdom Hearts 1. And that's semi-licensed. It was, it's licensed, but it was written for the game.
Right.
I would say though, probably the surprise one for me would be the First Planet side. Has some really neat instrumentals. And then in terms of like songs that are just burned into my permanent long term memory would be the themes from the original several Dragon Warrior games.
Yeah, because they're 15-second loops played over 20 hours.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But I would say probably my favorite. I really liked the theme song to the original Ragdoll Kung Fu. Not that one.
Oh no.
Not that one. That's actually what I was looking up, was to see if I could still find it. The original one was this really over the top like rap song, but the entire song is just like very, very dense with like references to various martial arts and like various kung fu movies and stuff like that. So nice. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. So tailor made for you.
Yes.
Yeah. I will go ahead and do mine. I feel like I've talked about this so much before. Obviously, from those previous conversations, like the Machinarium soundtrack is like the perfect mix of like ambient and just kind of like noise music for me to like listen to at all times of the day. So good. It's technically licensed, but the Braid soundtrack is awesome for productivity as well. Just like in terms, I'm just saying stuff that I will put on and like not. Like it will enhance my concentration, but not like distract from it.
Yeah.
In line with what people have like talked about, Chrono Cross rather, that was where like Mitsuda definitely took over from Uematsu and was like, okay, this is all mine and I'm going to like make it weird. And, so good. And even those, like OC remixes of those are fantastic as well, because they did do, different instrumentations of them. And I would say like that OC remix page for Chrono Cross is a definite pro click. And just to throw something different in that I don't say every single time, not just like the Sword and Sorcery soundtrack, but like anything that Jim Guthrie has done. So like even for sound shapes, like the corporal or the corporational or whatever it is, I forget, like his set of levels, so good. Like I will put that on in a story room to do like whiteboards and shit, like just to get like concentrated, because it is that that kind of Fight Club-esque techno kind of thing. So good.
Yeah, really good.
Yep, corporeal, that's what it's called. There we are. So that's mine. Usually, just in general, if I'm not listening to crazy, overblown, like folk rock, Long Winters, Ockerville River style stuff, it is going to be like ambient. And so anything that serves that purpose will do it. Runners up are Bastion and Journey, because reasons, because I cannot choose. So I'm going to throw off to either Ben or Dennis, who wants to go next.
I can go next.
Okay.
If that's okay with you, Ben.
It is. It's fine.
That's perfectly fine.
Oh, man. So, yeah. My favorite has to be the music from the Rayman games. Just because it so perfectly captures the essence of those games. It's very, very kind of zany and imaginative. So there's a lot of ukulele and, you know, the voices sound like they're on helium half the time. It's all like gibberish words and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it just sets the mood for what those games were about, and they're all very, very catchy and get stuck in your head. So the song from the water levels in the Rayman Origins game, even though it's all like gibberish, I could probably recite the lyrics to you. just from memory, even though it's been forever since I've played that game. And then the Rayman Legends game, every set of levels ends with a level set to music. And so it's almost like a platformer Guitar Hero kind of thing where you kind of jump and punch and everything in time with the music to get through the level. And those are just incredibly imaginative. One of my favorites is a mariachi version, going back to what I said I was going to reference, a remix. It's a mariachi remix of Eye of the Tiger. And it is phenomenal. And then not only that, but then once you beat all the levels, you open up kind of a series of challenge levels, which is those music levels in an 8-bit style, like chiptune style. And like they do a bunch of effects on the screen to make it harder to play. It's really fun. But therefore, there is an 8-bit remix of a mariachi remix of Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah.
Which is also really, really good.
Huh.
Charlie Kaufman would love it.
Yes, he would. Wheels within wheels. Yeah. That's I could have sworn that you would say Little Big Planet, but that is technically licensed, so I could see why you swerve from it.
I was gonna give a shout out to Little Big Planet, but you stole my thunder.
It works. Don't worry. People who would do that, it would be Dennis. However, you have a thing to say.
I mean, that was just a shout out, like an honorable mention, because I felt bad that it did not get mentioned at all. But I guess we asked them not to mention licensed soundtracks, so it's not whatever.
It's like I said, it's a loose guideline.
We will hunt you down, damn it.
Yeah. We know your names.
Don't make me come up there, Ben.
Yeah. My favorite, I would say, is Portal 2 soundtrack. I really like, because it's a nice blend of electronic and I don't even know what the other half would be. It's electronic. So.
It's pretty intense. Like, are you talking about like a music to test to, like that free one that they put out, or?
Well, so I have a copy of, I don't know if it's quote unquote the soundtrack. I think it's somebody took all the music files from the computer version of the game and posted them. Yeah. So some of them are only like a few seconds long.
Yeah.
So it's like music you test to and just different, bytes. Like, so some of it is music from like the ending. And it's only like maybe a 30-second excerpt, but it's just really good.
Nice.
Yeah, I could see that. The music in that was really good. I just remember the official soundtrack being more intense than I remember the actual experience of the game being.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, it drew me out of any kind of zone that I was trying to get into, even though I really dug the component parts and the instrumentation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, nice.
Nice. Game music. We love it. It is so good. And I think that any of these would be perfectly valid things for you to both download and also listen to while you're doing stuff. So thank you everybody for participating in that. If you would like to see our discussion questions as they come up, usually on Tuesday afternoons, that is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, where you can like us and then see those pop up on your feed. I'm blown away by the amount of participation and thoughtful participation that we've had just over the past like half year, really. So all of you rule. Are we ready to button it up?
I'll speak. Yeah. Then. Yes.
I think so.
Okay, cool. Wow, he's back. Yay.
I was gonna step up and then he's there himself.
The man himself.
Stole your thunder.
Yeah.
Stole my stealing your thunder.
It was his to begin with, Dennis. Walk away.
Never mind a button.
Oh man. So like I said before, thank you for participating, but also thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Level. It is a very fun show to do, and to have everybody pay attention to this is very neat. So if you would like to help the show, you can leave us a rating or a view on iTunes, all that usual song and dance, that jazz. We mentioned the Facebook thing. Tell your friends if you know somebody who likes video games and may or may not be prone to the podcast lifestyle. Say like, hey, check these guys out. They're, you know, industry outsiders. They talk about weird stuff and they go on tangents and it's kind of their thing.
They can't make it through a person's comment.
Nope. Literally no focus. So yeah. But tell friends, because that is one of the hugest ways that we grow. And, you know, seeing new faces and new names in our various feedback channels is always welcome. And that's pretty big. For the network, you can listen to the other shows. I'm not going to mention particular names, but you can check it out at duckv.tv. And if you would like to support us monetarily, it does not require any special effort except to go to duckv.tv/tipjar and use the Amazon link that is there on the left-hand column. We just added a UK link, so if you are in Great Britain and want to buy stuff, you can have a little kickback go our way. Does not cost you anything extra, and I believe there is a Canada link there, or it will be there soon. Regardless, if you are in the English-speaking world, you can help us out. And that does go a long way towards covering website hosting, bandwidth, equipment, all of that. So, yeah.
I just wanted you to be like, and if you're from Canada, then fuck right off.
No, why would I do that? Like, I'm
Canadians are cool.
No, I'm in the middle of a Trailer Park Boys watch through, and if that is a a relevant cross section of your population, you guys need some help. It's cool. I'm not gonna cut you down. You need to be built up.
That would be like if someone was like, if Ancient Aliens is a cross section of American culture, then they're in trouble.
Screw that. Ancient Aliens is awesome.
Yeah, I know.
anything that can be attributed directly to the influence of Lovecraft.
Yeah. So
no, if you're from Canada, we love you very much.
Yeah, definitely. we tolerate you listening to us. In fact, we welcome it. No, so I don't even know why I joked about that. Everybody is welcome here on The Level. So was there anything that I missed, fellas?
I think that's
it. Okie dokie. So let's finish it out with Twitter. I am Cole Ross, your host. I am at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I am Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer.
Yep. And what kind of words of wisdom can we leave you with for the next week? Don't fry our stees. Hey, Dennis.
Hello.
All right. So as I said, let's not take forever doing it this time. Last weekend was kind of a wake up call, or sorry, last week's episode was kind of a wake up call when I saw when we got off and Dennis brought attention to it, and also when I edited it down, it was like almost a 3-hour episode. yeah. So I'm going to be a bit more of a hard on about time. And hopefully
hard ass.
either or, right?
And we have our post roll.